The scripture this morning will be Matthew 5, verses 1 through 9, if you'll look in page 4 of the Pew Bible, the New Testament. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God." Hear what the scripture is saying.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. Some of you know I've been around the church for a while. We've been here since 1984. I think we started coming in 1983 and joined in 1984. My remarks today were influenced, I think, by my upbringing with my family and all that I've experienced since. I was a pastor's child. I was one of four children that Mom and Dad raised in Kansas City, and they served several pulpits in the Kansas City area, and then Dad became an administrative leader of the Methodist Church, and he dragged me and some of the other siblings, I think, to see maybe about 100 different churches over the years. So I've had some experience in different churches. But I came down to Dallas and became a student at SMU. I learned a little bit about service at SMU. I probably learned a little bit while I was a child at First United Methodist Church in Independence, Missouri, and in the activities of the MYF, what my parents did. But when I got to SMU, I became active. I had a scholarship. I thought maybe I ought to pay back a little bit, and so became active in student life and student services. And I graduated from SMU with the dean of students telling me I should become a minister. Well, I decided not to do that, but I decided to become a social worker, and I went to work for Child Protective Services and worked there about 10 years, and I've been doing social work for over 40 years now. So I think I know a little bit about service, and I will talk a little bit about how Christianity and social work kind of blend together and merge together. But I want you to know just a little bit about what makes me active here at this beautiful building, in this beautiful congregation, and in this community of East Dallas. So I was kind of raised to take leadership in church and in school, and I was a jock. I was into sports, and I think that taught leadership as well, and it taught taking some risk. And I think that's what leaders do. I think that's what people who are in service do. Upon graduation, when I went to work for Child Protective Services, I saw some of the worst sides of society. I saw some of the worst things that could be done to children. Janet and I married shortly thereafter, and I took her, I remember, once to Parkland Hospital, and we visited with a burned child, and we had another I made her go another time with another child whose sibling had died by being starved to death, and this child survived. And so I've been able to see some of those situations that Christ talked about when he was on the mountaintop with the disciples in terms of serving the least of these. And it has taught me something about patience. It's taught me something about compassion. And it's taught me something about giving back. After Child Protective Services, while I was at Child Protective Services, they told me I should go to law school. Everybody wanted me to get a better degree or something, I guess. And I decided to go and get a master's degree in social work. And I got that at UTA and continued at Child Protective Services and then moved over to work at the Mental Health Association, did a lot of work with the mentally ill, helped set up a lot of the sexual assault treatment programs in town, worked with probably 50 different agencies and learned what makes this community tick. In that work, I was fortunate to work for a nurse who knew everybody in town, and I became friends with Charlie Sprague. Charlie Sprague was head of the medical school, and he happened to be also on many of the boards that ended up giving money to fix this building up. So one of the things I want to get across today is that there are opportunities to be of service, and in being in service, you see and meet some of the servant leaders in our community, and that should inspire us. That should inspire all of us. I got to meet Ron Anderson at Parkland Hospital, Charlie Sprague at the medical school, a number of leaders of social service agencies, and seeing how our community has addressed some of the common problems of society over the years has been very meaningful to me. Look, we are not so proud of our child abuse system now, as you've seen in the newspapers, but in the days when I was there, we had enough staff and the community wasn't as big, and we were able to have some pretty important work get done and protect a lot of children. We've seen improvements in the mental health system. We've seen money pulled away from them. So as a social worker, I guess I've learned to be of service and in service. I left the Mental Health Association. I went and worked for an emergency assistance center. I went over to Promise House and worked with runaway teens. I started working with pregnant and parenting teens. Social workers move around a lot because money changes. Ended up in the last 5 or 6 years working with persons who are HIV positive and trying to keep them healthy. And the medicines have been so amazing that I was able to make a difference in that community. And I'm still working doing that. Now, somebody in the middle of all this said, when I was working for Child Protective Services, you need to go to see this young liberal minister in East Dallas where you live. And that was Bill Bryan, who had come here in either 82 or 83. And so Janet and I paid a visit to the church and met Bill and were immediately put to work. So I've skipped one of my important pieces, and I want to back up a little bit. I want to tell you a little bit about the main goals of what a social worker is, and I want to see if you can see the connection to Christianity. The mission of social work profession is rooted in a set of core values. These core values are embraced by social workers throughout the profession, and are the foundation of our unique purpose and perspective. And these core values are, number one, service. Second, social justice. Three, dignity and worth of the person. Importance of human relationships. Integrity and doing your work with competence. Now, does that sound like a good Christian? So I think the reason I'm up here today is because I am in a field where I learned how to be of service. And there were a number of people here at Grace Church who asked me to jump in at a time when the church was thinking of closing down. The church had dropped down to a membership of, or attendance of somewhere between 50 and 100. So we have 3 or 4 more times the size today than what we did when Janet and I first came here. And it's true, when we walked out of here the first or second Sunday, we said, we're gonna have to go to work. We're gonna be asked to do some things. And it was we soon learned the joy that was involved there. It was also clear at the time that the durable saints who had been around here for years and years had used up a lot of energy, but they also had rolled bandages in World War I, ministered to the military in World War I and II, started the East Dallas Cooperative Parish, which was the beginnings of the preschool and the legal clinic and the medical clinic, and the EDCP eventually ended up with about 14 different churches involved doing ministry to our East Dallas area. One reason is because this neighborhood was in transition. Some people were scared of people of different color. And so some people bolted from from the Baptist church next door. Some people left East Dallas Christian Church. Some people left Grace Church. At the same time, we were bringing in Asians who were being resettled from Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. And in the parlor, the pretty parlor that we have now, there used to be a ceiling in there with a sewing class for Asian women to learn a skill so they could go to work in Dallas. So there was a number of opportunities to learn about service at this church. There were significant people in this church who made an impression on me, on Janet, on some of you in the pews. People like Fleeta Williams Stallworth, who was on the staff at SMU, and she greeted everyone that came in here with a warm smile, and any woman, she twisted their arm to get involved in the UMW. So you couldn't get past Fleeta and not be in the UMW. And she asked me and she asked others to step forward and take responsibility at the church. She was a leader in the administrative council, and she was involved in almost every activity. She, also with Helen Knight Stallworth, one of the reasons I think we joined and many of the old timers here joined is because Helen came up to you and gave a big hug. And she told you how important you were, and she made this your home. She invited this to be your home. And she continued in service. She actually kept the books for the church for a long time. And I think when she quit keeping the books, she gave the task to Betty Bucks. And Betty Bucks was also serving in the Agape Clinic, which had started in 1983, a little before the time we got here. And Betty Bucks served every Saturday for 4 to 6 hours in the Agape Clinic as a nurse. That was her background. And she took care of getting all those people in. And at that time, the Agape Clinic was just one day a week. So Betty was the backbone of that. And then on Sunday, she came and collected all the collection and did the books for the church. And she served for so many years loyally and quietly with a pretty smile. And of course, both Fleeta and Betty had husbands that were involved in the church as well. Jack Russell, most of you probably never heard him, but some of you have seen me with keys on my side walking around. And Jack Russell had the keys. And I learned from Jack which of these keys opened every door in this church. And Carl McCleskey said, well, Dale, we want you to kind of be a keeper of the keys. And Carl asked me a number of times to come down here on Saturday and help him put Band-Aids on the church because it was falling apart. He knew how to fix anything, not always the best way, because at that time we didn't have any money. And so Bill Bryan used to sweet talk me and bribe me with his dad's barbecue. Most of you know Sonny Bryan's barbecue. Well, Bill Bryan is his son. And I just happened to grow up on barbecue in Kansas City. And then when I was at Child Protective Services, Sonny Bryan's barbecue was just down the street from my office. So I had an acquaintance with Sonny before I met Bill. But he knew that was a soft spot in my heart. So I remember being asked to, I think, chair the administrative council at Sonny Bryan's barbecue. And I think I was asked to chair the Capitol campaign at Sonny Bryan's barbecue. But I did both. When Janet and I were here, we gave birth to our son, Jonathan, in 1984. And we said, this is going to be our church home. And at that time, the nursery had closed. There was no children in the nursery. Mary Todd's children probably were the last ones before ours. And so Bill Bryan had two children and we had one, and then Captain Carroll came along, adding to the youth in the church, and I think the church has been on its way since. But we learned that there is a role that we could play, and if we didn't play it, maybe the church would die. Because the church takes all of us to be part of it. It takes all of us to have a role, and it takes all of us to be prayerful, not only for what happens inside the church, but what happens in the neighborhood around it. And so something has occurred over the years, I think, with my arm being twisted and a few meals of barbecue. It was important to be part of this church. As I mentioned, I've been in a number of churches, but there's not many that are prettier than this. There's not many that are more sacred than this. Nancy, who works for the Dallas Morning News, and occasionally I get to plant stories with her, had in the newspaper a few years ago that Grace was one of the most sacred places in Dallas. And boy, it was a joy to see that in the newspaper, to tell other people. At that time, we had a Zen meditation room, and we allowed people of all different backgrounds to worship here and to celebrate their faith. So this place has had its significance over the year. Not only the Stallworths and the Betty Bucks and all, but people I would be amiss if I didn't mention Carl and Francis McCleskey. I said Carl pieced things together with bubblegum, but he actually said, we need to keep this place alive. He saw the people leaving and he said, this is important. The tradition is so rich that we need to stay. Henrietta Eight was a teacher in the neighborhood, lived on Swiss Avenue, and she taught many of the members in the church, they and their children. And she became the historian of the church, and she also asked me, would I pay attention to the history of the church? And she said, and she talked to many of us and said, it's important to tell our story. And so when we do new member orientation, we tell the story that Henrietta put together and has kept over the years, and some of the pictures that she kept under her bed when she feared that this church would close down. When we started the capital campaign, many of the members of the church said, you're not going to be able to raise $2 million. This place has fallen down and the membership has left. And I said, well, I'm crazy enough to try. We paid a consultant, and he said, well, you could probably raise about $1.2 million. And so we just didn't do it in a short period of time. We just extended our capital campaign over a longer period of time. And so we were able to put a new roof on. We were able to put a new electrical system, new plumbing. And you've seen, of course, the beauty of the parlor, and the clinic downstairs was renovated. And those things would not have happened if it wasn't for people providing both sweat equity and dollars and service. We had a whole crew of people who knocked out walls in the basement to create the medical clinic. It was kind of scary with some of us who weren't trained with sledgehammers knocking out walls, and also knocking out the staircase and the balcony and the parlor. But what we built was a connection between individuals. We serve together. We serve to beautify our church, to make it last. One of the commitments of the capital campaign was we were going to be here another 100 years. And people believed that. Because of people like Henrietta, people like Francis and Carl McCleskey, the Bryans. In the middle of all this was a whole transition of Asians that came in, led by Panus Pan, the first Cambodian ordained pastor who was serving his community. We had people like Palmer Strother, who had a storied career but was a great jazz bass player, and we had him up here playing his bass one Sunday afternoon, and he served as our sexton in the church. And as part of our efforts to involve more people in the community and of different races. As I mentioned before, Mary Todd led us with the East Dallas Cooperative Parish and has been a backbone of much of the service of this church for years in saying that we need to be involved in the community. I also want to thank the trustees of this church, and particularly people like Keith, who's our current chair of trustees, and Susan, who preceded him. Mark, I think, has served as chair. Riley, a number of people have been in service to our church. This church is different than many of the Methodist churches in this conference and probably around the United States, because we have active servanthood by you, by the members. We don't have as much staff as a lot of churches have. And actually, Judith gets to go home at night and spend some time with her wonderful husband because you guys are here doing some of the work. And it's pretty amazing that a building that's built in 1903, that's this old, that has as many problems as it does, performs 7 days a week. And that was one of the tenets also of the capital campaign. It was, if we're going to renovate this place, it's not just going to be a beautiful sanctuary, but it's going to be a place that's used 7 days a week. And we talked about whether, if we made it too pretty, what if someone broke in or tore it up? But the faith of the members here has always said this needs to be a place of service. This needs to be a place where if some child dies in the neighborhood, the family can have a service here. If the Turtle Creek Corral needs somewhere to rehearse, we made this available to them. If there needs to be a community meeting about crime, the church is open. We do medical care in the basement now. It's done across the street, but it's still a part of us. And we've invited services for pregnant and parenting teens to come in so that mothers with new children can learn how to parent and do it in the right way with support and finish their education. And we're doing it with the Bonhoeffer House in reaching out to the poor in the neighborhood, serving meals. Many of us don't know all the things that happen every day. I think one of the beautiful things that I've learned from Bill Bryan and Chuck Cox and Diana Holbert and Judith is their joy in being in service here at this church, because they get to do more things than most pastors do. And they get to see more challenges and probably have to use their brain a little bit more because of some of the complexities of the individuals that we serve. And just as Christ, you know, talked to his disciples about being of service and serving those in need and inspiring those who feel left out, who feel on the bottom of the totem pole, we have an opportunity to reach out to that community that's both part of this church and outside of this church. The reason to do this presentation today and to get a social worker up here to talk is that maybe there's some things to learn from my experiences, from your experiences. There's only probably 10 or 20 of us that have been around since I first came, and the rest of you have come along. And what we have tried to do, and we don't always do it as well as we would like, is to involve you in finding an opportunity to be of service. We want to involve you in committee activity. The trustees meet every month. I've unfortunately been on that for 10 or 20 or maybe more years, but they meet on a monthly basis. The missions committee, what Chris has been doing with a breakfast program for the Agape Clinic and all the other things missions has done. We've even built houses for Habitat for Humanity. Those things take deliberate work from all of us, and it can't be done by just 5 or 10 people here. There's a role for each of you. Most of us do not feel that we have the leadership skills or all the service skills that might be needed, but somehow you have to pray, you have to find the courage, you have to have Christ's leadership to lead you to volunteer yourself to be of service and find how you can help. Some of you are good cooks. Some of you were great parents and could teach young children. Some of you were nurses. I know they need more social workers in the medical clinic. I know we need a new chair for the trustees committee. So if you're interested, see me or Keith or Judith. But there's a number of opportunities to be of service to this church. The nominating committee will be meeting soon, if it hasn't already started, and we'll be asking you what your talents are. What are your gifts? How can you serve? What would you be interested in doing to make a difference in the community of Grace and in the community of East Dallas? We want you to realize that there are many saints that went before you. Bill Bryan called them the durable saints and the daring saints, and I think it's a good label to continue going forward. There are people who've done these things for years, and there's new people in the pews who are the daring saints who are ready to take Grace maybe in a new direction, maybe to continue some of the important things we have done, but also to be creative about how can we serve a diverse community that surrounds us? How can we serve people who are struggling with how society perceives them around their gender orientation, their sexuality, all those issues? How can we be inclusive? Are we willing to take the risks to be an inclusive community? We all know there is plenty of pain out there. The voters are angry. I told Judith I wouldn't say anything political, but I know that the voters are angry. And they're angry because they're not connected. And church is a place to do that. My father, one of the things I remember most about him saying is the church is one of the best change agents in the world. And if you give a dollar to the church, it goes much further than if you give it to a nonprofit or a charity. Because the church puts it back into direct action in the local church, the national church, and most of you are aware that we have international funds and get involved in disasters. But Dad always said, you know, give to your church. Tithing is important, and give back. So this month, we're using a group of people, a laity, to talk about how you can serve your church. How can you share your talents? How can you give money to help do the work that we do? It would be easy to hire 10 or 15 people to run this church and we could sit back in the pew and not do anything. But we would miss the beauty of sharing times with each other, of learning from each other, of learning about diversity, of learning about the challenges that Christ presents to us to be in service. So we must do the work. We must continue this building. I invested a lot of time in this capital campaign because we had a good architect, and he made us dream big. And he said we could fix this stained glass, we could keep the rain out, and we could provide space for the kids to learn English as a new language. And we could have prayer groups and Sunday school classes, and we've been able to do that. And I'm so proud to be part of this congregation, and I hope that you are too. What I'm asking is that you approach the leadership of the church, the clergy and the laity, and tell us how you'd like to serve in the future. The vitality of the church and the ability to regenerate ourselves is in your hands. It's something that we all have to take ownership of. So please pray about how you can serve Grace in your community. When the nominations committee comes calling, please give them your thoughtful consideration. I hope that Jesus' message in the Beatitudes of being of service and in service is meaningful, and that maybe some of my comments today will cause you to say, yes, I can serve Christ and I can serve my community. Thank you. Let's have a time of silence, and then we'll have a short prayer.